The two primary matters on our agenda, the first is the matter of having the report from the National Trust for Historic Preservation was referred to us by the county board chair as it was also referred to the Parks Committee. And so that will be our first item for discussion. It's quite a lengthy report. It was circulated to you as part of the meeting materials. So I think I thought it would be helpful to have a presentation from the historic preservation people. Please introduce yourself and
Hi, I'm Jennifer Sandy. Would you like me to stand?
However you want.
Can everyone hear me if I just will see? I'm Jennifer Sandy. I'm the Associate Field Director in the Chicago Field Office of the National Trust for Historic Preservation. And we took it upon ourselves to investigate as a historic preservation nonprofit. We are often in the position of advocating for rehabilitation of historic buildings, and one of the key tools in that work can be the federal historic rehabilitation tax credits. With the domes being owned by Milwaukee County, we wanted to investigate whether or not that was even a possibility and what some of the key items might be to keep in mind if that is pursued. Just as a caveat, I am not a tax credit attorney. As Bill pointed out, this is a very dense report, but I will do my best to answer questions, present the material to you tonight, and follow up with any questions that I'm not able to answer. If you could advance this slide, please. So as background to the National Trust's involvement with the domes, we first started hearing from members of the public in 2016 when they were initially were closed. We listed them on our America's 11 Most Endangered Historic Places list in 2016, and in 2017 we selected them as a national treasure, which is the premier program of the National Trust, and have been working closely with advocates in the community to find a preservation solution since that time. We engaged Nixon Peabody to research federal historic tax credits. They are really one of the premier legal authorities in federal historic tax credits based in Washington, D.C. They work around the world. So they put together this memo for us as their client, and the recommendations contained therein are from Nixon Peabody, LLP. Could advance, please. As I said, the full report, I believe you all have in your packets, and of course is available on Legistar, should not be construed as legal advice, so here goes. And I also apologize, there are a lot of words. I think there's one photo in this presentation, so sorry for that. So the first key finding that Nixon Peabody came up with is that it may be possible to utilize federal historic tax credits to help fund rehabilitation of the domes. Federal tax credit, historic tax credits, there are numerous experts and attorneys out there that know how to do these transactions. So if the county were to partner with attorneys experienced in this, they would be able to help advise on how that could be structured. But it does appear that if the project is structured correctly, there is a possibility to take advantage of those credits. Federal credits can provide a tax credit of 20% of the qualified rehabilitation expenditures. And you can combine federal credits with other incentives. State credits, the New Markets tax credits, I know this is a New Markets eligible census tract. I believe it's also in an opportunity zone. We were not able to dive into all of those different incentives, but theoretically that's something that in your phase three work perhaps you may have consultants look into. But just to understand that it is possible to combine the credits with other sources of financing. And federal historic tax credits have helped fund other major rehabilitations of government-owned properties. One that I've been very involved with is Cincinnati's Union Terminal, which just completed a $228 million rehabilitation. They used federal and state credits. They used a quarter-cent sales tax increase that was approved by voters, private philanthropy, really very layered financing package. It is owned by Hamilton County with an ownership stake also by the City of Cincinnati, and is operated by the nonprofit Cincinnati Museum Center. So This is just one example of a place where these credits were used to help with a pretty large-scale rehabilitation project. Next slide. Federal credits could provide several million dollars of project equity. So if they provide a tax credit of 20% of your qualified rehabilitation expenditures, and you just take the $20 to $30 million total cost that your consultants came up with during the phase one feasibility study, you see that it could provide $4 to $6 million in project equity. Qualified rehabilitation expenditures, that really includes almost all work to the inside and outside of the historic buildings, but not movable equipment, landscaping, paving, or any new additions, structures that are new additions. However, the credits would likely not be available if one or more domes were demolished, partially demolished, or rebuilt. And that's because in order to utilize the federal credits, the domes must be listed on the National Register of Historic Places. That is largely an honorific listing. It's something that's managed by the Wisconsin State Historic Preservation Office in conjunction with the National Park Service. The State Historic Preservation Office has already determined that the domes would be eligible for this list, so that baseline criteria has been met. But if you do move forward with federal historic tax credits, you may not make changes to the overall property that affect the historic character. So, for instance, demolishing one of the domes or doing something else that preservation reviewers deemed to be not compatible with the historic character of the facility. Yes, sir.
So, Sandy, I'm questioning that a little bit. So, does that preclude making changes to, say, that so the ramps inside the domes are not ADA compliant?
Right.
Does that fall under this preservation?
No, probably not. The reviewers of the project at the state and federal level would be the final arbiters on what's acceptable. But typically what they do is they look at the buildings as a whole and they identify what are the character-defining features of the buildings. So it would, the dome structure themselves, or what are the elements that make it historically significant, and if there are elements that have maybe been there a long time but are perhaps less integral to that integrity, then those are areas where changes can be made. So federal credits very often are used with buildings that, are rehabilitated for an entirely different use, or many changes are made, interior and exterior. So I don't believe that would be a requirement, or those types of things it would be possible to change. In addition to, when you're looking at accessibility, there are often, it's a give and take to achieve those goals.
Good, thanks.
Mm-hmm. So in order to utilize the federal credits, the rehab work must be certified by the National Park Service, and that's the process I've just been talking about, working with the State Preservation Office and the Park Service, working with the architects on the project. There are specific standards, the standards for rehabilitation that would need to be followed. And all of this is a process that is, as I said, is very regularly gone through with large projects that are making use of the federal credits. And another key point, in order to utilize federal historic tax credits, because the domes are owned by Milwaukee County, public-private partnerships would need to be in place. So the domes would likely not be eligible for the federal credits if the county undertook the rehab by itself. Typically, the way that these projects work is that the owner, the county government entity, would lease the domes to another entity for a long term, and that for-profit entity would be the owners of the tax credit improvement, but the county would retain ownership of the building. There often are other layers of subsidiaries. You can create nonprofit subsidiary, for-profit subsidiaries. There's additional research that we need to take place to outline the specific deal structure. But if you go to the next slide, this is one possible way that it could work, a way that other buildings have made this work. So the county could maintain ownership, provide that long-term lease, which is typically 55 or more years, the lease would actually be held by a for-profit entity. And the for-profit would be created by a nonprofit that would be kind of the partner with the county on this project. So the county would work with the nonprofit to create a master plan, to you know, figure out rehabilitation, how all of that would work, and likely also could partner with that nonprofit to operate the rehabilitated domes following the end of the project. And then the nonprofit would be a parent to this for-profit entity that would be created that would actually be the lessee of the county. Mm-hmm.
And you said, take a step back there. So the nonprofit, you said, would run the rehabilitation of the domes.
The for-profit would undertake the rehabilitation. They would, the for-profit would be the owner of the improvements for federal tax law purposes, because the IRS doesn't want to give you tax benefits if you're not, you know,
paying taxes.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's somewhat complicated. This is just one way that it could work, but there are many different ways that it could work, including having nonprofit partners and for-profit partners, and it looks a little bit strange, but it's regularly done, and if I were more of a tax credit expert, I could probably define other ways that it could be done for you. Yeah.
Wouldn't that for-profit entity that's being created here need to actually generate revenues and profits to offset the tax credits against?
They do not need to generate revenues and profits. If they do generate revenues and profits, those would be taxable. But typically in projects like this, that does not happen. No.
So they can harvest the tax credits as would actually not show a profit.
They're established corporations.
Like it's sell
yes.
for credits.
Yeah, so then you can syndicate the credits to get the equity into the project.
This isn't anything new. The Friends of the Domes is a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. The gift shop at the Domes does make a profit. So we do pay taxes whenever we show a profit. But there's been years where there's been no profit at all. It's like doing business as. It's not a completely separate entity or a separate tax ID, but this type of a structure is informed.
These would be separate structures, though, with different taxes.
It would be a nonprofit parent to a for-profit, either an existing nonprofit or a new one to be created. The other key takeaway from this is that the for-profit would be the actual lessee. This is because the nonprofit can't be the lessee. They can't be the owners of the improvements because they're a nonprofit. It has to be a taxable entity that is the owners of the improvements to the building.
But the nonprofit would control the for-profit.
Correct. Yep. That is a way that it could be established.
Right.
Correct. Yeah. Any other questions on this slide? So as I said, this is really commonly done. Legal counsel would advise the county on how to structure it most successfully. Another component of this to be aware of is that project funding that is received by the for-profit lessee generally has to be cash equity or other contributions, and they have to infuse that funding into the project. So typically grants or forgivable loans cannot be made directly to the for-profit. For the parts of the project that are qualified rehabilitation expenditures. So if it's for paving or something, you know, that's not part of that federal tax credit project, that's a different matter. But typically, if you've got the nonprofit that's seeking grants or loans or other things to infuse, that money has to be infused into the project through that for-profit lessee. And again, there are a lot of different ways that this could be done. I know in Cincinnati, they had quite a bit of private philanthropy supporting that project, and they were able to, you know, have that help support that $228 million project. So it can be done, just something to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. The E and QRE?
Expenditure. Qualified Rehabilitation Expenditure. Yep. So, and this is to the point of how the funding goes into the project. You have an investor syndicate the credits to a historic tax credit investor. So the investor would provide a cash equity contribution, which you can then use for the rehabilitation, in exchange for the historic tax credits that they would then use. And there's a 60-month period in which those arrangements have to remain in place after the completion of the project, and then those relationships can be unwound. So just big picture, it does appear that federal credits could be a source of rehabilitation funding if it's structured correctly. There's additional research needed, you know, to outline how it would work and what entities would be involved and how other funding sources could contribute. But these are projects that are regularly done in addition to federal historic tax credits. Low-income housing historic tax credits are very similar in many ways. So this is something that, you know, that can be done. And you just need to make sure you have an experienced team working with you. So I hope as you move into phase three, I don't know what exactly you'll be looking at, but if you are looking at financing and funding sources, to engage experts in this to help provide guidance on whether this is an avenue that should be pursued for the Domes. And that is it. If you
questions?
Go to the last slide, if my contact information is up here, if anyone has questions following.
Other questions?
Yeah,
I have one other question. You know, the Domes are certainly a precious resource, and we're all, you know, excited to hear about your presentation here. And I thought your report was very well written too, so thank you. One of the complications we have here is the fact that the Domes are situated on park property that's been deeded to be designated as park forever kind of thing. And did you investigate that at all as far as how that would work within having a for-profit entity actually being the lessee?
Not in any
conflict
detail.
Between that deed and that
I believe that the attorneys did have that piece of information. In if you look deep into the footnotes in the portion that the attorneys put together, so I believe they did have that information when they made their findings. So my assumption is that would not impact the findings that they made. But I don't believe they looked into in any detail that provision that exists. So that might be something for further research. But it doesn't appear to preclude the recommendations made in the memo, since they did know that was the situation there.
We have lease arrangements with for-profit corporations at the Domes, and it doesn't violate the park restrictions. This is only contract is with a for-profit catering service. So it seems to me if that's permissible under our understanding of any deed restrictions or other restrictions on park use, that this would be just in that same category of a for-profit lessee playing a role in the operation of the place.
I think the issue is the term, the 55-year term, and the restriction on the deed does have a time bound. And so the Zilli contract is a short term, this is a long term. I can't speak to the legality, but I know that that's an important issue in terms of the 55-year commitment. I mean, that it's a park council question, but that would be the point that would need to be investigated.
The issue there may be whether or not it's the equivalent of a sale because it's for so long.
Exactly, that's mm-hmm. that's exactly the legal question. I don't know the answer, but I know that's the question.
And that is why it needs to be a long-term lease, because from the IRS perspective, it's equivalent to a sale. It's that, you know, the county is no longer the owner of the building and the improvements for federal tax purposes, even though the county would still be the owner legally and for state purposes, but federally, because the IRS doesn't want you taking credits on something that you don't own.
Other questions?
If I remember, I think I read on the report that, again, you have to file for historical designation. But there was a statement at the end that said that will not prevent you, that if there are structural problems in the future and it would have to be demolished, that it could be.
That's correct. The National Register of Historic Places is primarily honorific. It does not prevent demolition. It does not place restrictions on any of the properties that are listed on the National Register. The only thing it does is if there is federal money being utilized on a project, the federal agency involved with that needs to take a look at the building. They need to sort of stop and say, okay, this is a historic building, let's all talk. But they can still go ahead and do what they want to do. So it's not as if, you know, in local landmarking, often if something is locally landmarked, that means it can't be demolished without being reviewed and approved by a local landmark board. That is not the case with National Register listing. It's just a national designation to say this is an important historic place that matters to our nation, and we care about it, but it does not prevent demolition, alteration, anything like that.
Other questions? Well, thanks. That's quite encouraging in terms of a component of financing, and it seems that we are also in phase three, besides looking at funding sources, we're looking at partners and partnership relationships, and it seems to me we should be keeping the possibility that a partner, a nonprofit partner, would be a component of setting up a tax credit situation. So that's great. Okay. Nothing else? I'd like to promote the presence of Ian Batista, who has been here for a bit. He's being present. Thanks for coming. The next item on the agenda is approval of minutes from the January 7th.